From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
What's new in a new museum related to the Civil War? Well, there's much to be said. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores with our guest, Ms. Barbara Frankel, who is the founding executive director of the new Seminary Ridge Museum in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, right along Seminary Ridge from where we are broadcasting today. What is this institution? We'll talk about why it's different, but describe it a little bit to us, please.
Well, I like to think about the museum as really being having a twofold mission. One is to preserve the building itself. I think as we were putting together the exhibits and thinking about what this museum is all about, the building itself is such an important historical artifact. It's really an icon of the Civil War, certainly an icon of Gettysburg. The cupola is so recognizable by so many people, and it played an important role in the first day of the battle, the building itself. And so being able to preserve this building and repurpose it as a museum has been one of the major goals. The second goal of the museum is to tell some of the untold stories. The first day of the battle isn't as well, probably as well promoted or explained. Even for visitors of Gettysburg, they're really interested in day two and day three. But really, being able to understand the first day is a very important part of really thinking about why it happened here, how it unfolded, etc. The care of the wounded after the battle is a part of the story because it was a hospital. And then thirdly, which I think is the most unique part of the museum, is the exhibits on the second floor that deal with issues of faith and freedom. And I think we're really one of the first museums to really tackle the idea of what was the role of religion. And there's a lot of new research that we've been able to build on.
So on all three themes that you mentioned, if you said two, I hear three.
The
first day's battle, in itself, the first day's battle was a major American event. If there had not been the second and third day, this would still have been one of the major battlefields in America, because it would have been the only Confederate victory on Union soil. The war would have changed. The North probably would have changed because they would have had to deal with a Confederate victory. So it really is a big event, whether we like to glorify war or not.
However you count it in terms of the number of troops involved, the number of casualties, it's one of the major, the first day is one of the major battles of the Civil War by itself.
I gather you're not trying to compete with other Civil War museums in the area, and there's some great ones, but there's an emphasis here that can't be covered elsewhere as thoroughly.
I think that's really one of the strengths of the museum, that we're able to fit our stories into the larger story and really fill in some gaps that haven't been as well covered in Gettysburg and really even nationally.
It's nice that this all fits into floors. So if people who are listening have not come to Gettysburg to see the museum, they can imagine that we're now talking about the fourth floor and about the place where so many people have always longed, as I did as a kid, to be and to see, and that is in the cupola, to kind of recapture the feeling that Buford had, and Lee had, but certainly General Buford had, of that cupola view of the battlefield. Now, that's the top floor. That's the excitement for Civil War buffs. But it gets more and more out of the ordinary as we go down to the third and the second floors. On the third floor, I gather you're saying that on the care of the wounded, the individual stories there are uncountable because of the suffering of the wounded and the dying and those who cared for them. Issues there, death and dying, of care, surgery, doctors.
I think one of the really, you sort of mentioned, and I'll just sort of give listeners an idea of how we use the museum. Every single floor is fully interpreted, and people have access to every part of that building. So that when people come, they come to the first floor, which is really the orientation floor and a temporary exhibition. And we suggest that people start on the fourth floor, which is the first day of the battle. And about a good number of our visitors are buying the and choosing to go up into the cupola, which is was a terrific view in 1863, yeah. And it's still a terrific view. I sometimes tell visitors that in 5 minutes in the cupola, you can learn as much about the battle as you can reading five books. Because to actually see the terrain laid out, to really understand the juxtapositions, and really put yourself in Buford's place to say, what did he know at that point, and how he then was able to form a strategy based on what he saw. And it really was based on what he saw. So that's a really important component. And then the fourth floor, as you mentioned, deals with the first day. We go through with Dale Gallen murals of different events. So it's almost like walking into the scene, maps and timelines and artifacts. So there's really an immersion in the first day of the battle. Next, we suggest that people go to the third floor, work their way down, and that really does deal with the aftermath. And I think it's interesting because taking a lot of visitors through and seeing people experience the museum, the fourth floor is really what happened. It's also what people expect to see when they come to Gettysburg.
Yes.
And the third floor is really who it happened to. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things people talk about is how emotional that floor is.
Yes.
It's almost impossible not to be engaged emotionally in some ways. And I think part of that reason is that we're really able to go right down to individual people and their stories and how that battle affected them. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So it's really about who the battle affected, both civilians and the wounded, and the interaction of the many volunteers who came to take care of the wounded and their experiences. But it's really then very much on a personal level. Yep. And one of the wonderful things about that floor and the ability to interpret the care of the wounded at the Seminary Ridge Museum is that we know so much about it. We have diary accounts. We have the records from the Army of who the patients were. We have a lot of the medical records. And so this is a very individual. We can go through the names of real people.
Right,
it's not just casualties and numbers.
Not lists, right.
Or in the abstract. And you're looking at these scenes in the places where they happened.
Actually happened.
So there's a real immediacy to that floor, I think, which we see visitors really responding to.
Technologically, one of the steps up in this museum, and it will be duplicated again elsewhere, is the use of mannequins. Museums until now have been a little hesitant about mannequins because they looked cheap and tawdry. You just couldn't make them realistic. Now I've got people who told me when they turn the corner on the third floor, they say, my goodness, they've got a volunteer laying down in there, or there's a real person, or what is this? I mean, when you said the emotional impact is partly the result of some first-rate technological reproductions.
I have to say, you know, I've been involved with museums, visited a lot of museums, and I've had a lot of people tell me as well that those scenes are probably the best that they have ever seen. So the technology is that the figures are actually life cast figures. So they are real people who they are really sculptures. I mean, they are way beyond just
the old mannequin idea.
Addressed, you know, mannequin.
But in that on that floor also, besides being technologically superb, questions, big questions are raised about death and dying and about the care for the wounded. It's hard to imagine that in the Civil War there was no, at this point anyway, there was no organized care for the wounded in long term. And the people who came here were almost all volunteers, the Sisters of Charity, people from town.
Right. It was a combination. We know from the doctors and nurses who attended the patients, it was a combination of military personnel who were assigned. So there were medical doctors in the Army Corps.
And the nurses were soldiers, I presume, and not women, not an organized nursing corps.
Well, there's actually two. There are both military attendants who are... men who were in the army, but there was also a nurses corps just beginning at that time.
All right.
But then also volunteers from Philadelphia, from Lancaster, the Daughters of Charity from Emmitsburg. So and then a lot of people just locally from Gettysburg who volunteered and helped.
That combination then is probably the result of the overwhelming numbers of people involved and the length. The hospital was in use for at least
from July 1st to the middle
days.
Of September. September 16th was the last.
When the students asked to come back into the
university. Just about, yes. Actually, Colonel McFarland was the last patient to leave, and in his diary, he has conversations with Reverend Schmucker and it sort of acknowledges that it's already gearing up for the new school year.
It's a tragic but wonderful story. He's also the last patient to be brought into the building, in a sense. As his men bring him in one door, the Confederates are coming in the other, and then he's the last one to leave. And he does recover, and he survives and recovers. Moving downward to this most interesting, as I said, as we go downward, the floors become more and more unusual. And this one is close, you can be careful of the language, is close to being unique.
I think it definitely contributes a whole new perspective on the Civil War in terms of museum displays about the Civil War. The second floor deals with issues of faith and freedom. And I like to think about if the fourth floor was what happened and the third floor was who it happened to, the second floor really looks at questions of why. And it really invites people, I think, to put aside assumptions and to really think in some fresh ways about the Civil War, what were the reasons people came to fight, and what was in their minds as they really participated in something was so horrific and so disastrous for so many people, and yet was really fueled by very strong feelings and emotions and beliefs.
Yeah.
So I think really being able to get people to acknowledge, take part in, and better understand that is a major contribution that the museum is making.
Whatever we think of Common Core in educational circles nowadays, and it seems to be very popular with the vast majority of teachers, the idea is about the same here as it is in Common Core. It's to help people to think, to meditate, to... From what I saw at the museum, there's no attempt to give answers, no easy answers, no flip answers from the Bible or from some kind of theology. Most of it is to raise questions, deep questions. Who are we as Americans? What is the role of religion in America? What were the contributions, pro and con, of religion to the Civil War, both before and after as well? I was just reading a little thing from Tilly Pierce, who was a child survivor of the battle, and even in the 1880s, she's still formulating her response to the Civil War in what we would call Victorian religious terms. So that is all part of this this second floor.
And I think that's an important part of the approach that we've taken, and one that I think we're experimenting with to see how it works and how we can improve on it. One of the very popular and well-used parts of that exhibit is an interactive in one of the rooms, which are the computer interactives. And they're really all based not on right and wrong answers, but on dilemmas.
Yes.
And I think that as we go forward, looking at how we approach our educational programming for people of all ages, really getting people to grapple with dilemmas, which are not a right or wrong answer.
Right.
It's often to goods or to ills. How do you make choices and to really get people to understand how people in the 19th century were making difficult decisions based on their beliefs, what they thought was right, the best that they could. And, of course, every age deals with dilemmas. It's not only the 19th century. And I think that just in terms of an educational and kind of transformational experience for people, to be able to use the 19th century, the events of the Civil War, which are very extreme, but to really try those on and to think about how they would react in those circumstances, how they react to circumstances in their own time. And I think that really does involve deeper thinking and real engagement with our visitors.
I'm Jerry Christensen, and you're listening to this podcast of the Seminary Explorers with our guest, Ms. Barbara Franco, who is the founding executive director of the new Seminary Ridge Museum. We are so involved in that I went well beyond my midterm point of reintroducing us, but I think that everyone will forgive us for that since we covered the purpose of this museum. Now, let's think about how this this museum is not just a building that people come to visit, but is going to have an impact throughout the nation in other ways. So let's talk about the kind of programs that you're going to be sharing with the public in the near future and what their goals are.
Well, one of the ways that we look at the museum is that it is very grounded in the place and the historic site. So all of the exhibits that we have in the building have a starting point with something that happened and is connected directly with events and people who intersected with that building. So it's very specific in one way. And yet the ideas that it introduces are very, very broad and have great ramifications across time and place. So one of the things that we did, we've done, is to join a coalition of Sites of Conscience, which is an international organization that really looks at museums that deal with difficult issues. And we feel that that's going to be very helpful to us in helping to shape our own programming as we go forward, and to really connect us to similar kinds of efforts all around the world. And so part of that is then looking at these bigger ideas and bigger issues that the specific events here on Seminary Ridge really open up to people. So, for example, this year we applied for and received a grant from the Gilder Lehrman Institute through an NEH program called Created Equal, which is a series of films that deal with abolition, the Freedom Riders, slavery by another name, and will involve, we're calling this series History Conversations film series. So the idea of using what are mostly PBS films to look at these bigger issues, some from the past, some from more contemporary and ongoing, and then to have serious conversations about them with scholars. And we think that that's really extending that conversation, continuing the conversation, is really an important part of what we think the museum needs to do, not just show what happened, but also connect it to people's lives, connect it to things that are on their minds and that they're thinking about in contemporary times as well.
These programs then are going to be a focus of a mission, an outreach of the museum that's going to allow people who can't come here to see something of the things that we're learning or trying to grapple with elsewhere than right here on the Ridge. What's been the public response so far?
The public response has really been astonishing to us. I mean, you always hope that what you've put out is going to be of interest to people. We hear two things very consistently from our visitors. One is that it's a lot more than what they expected. So, again, people expect that they're going to see something about the battle and the events of 1863. But as they move into the care of the wounded and issues of faith and freedom, this becomes a much bigger story than what they had anticipated. The second thing they tell us is that a visit to the museum is very emotional, that people are very emotionally engaged. And, you know, I think that's partly the subject matter, partly the approach. I know I talked to a young woman who came with her parents. She's a high school junior. And she said, this was very immersive. She said, I'm sitting outside now trying to reconnect with the present time because I felt so immersed in the past. So I think that that's something we see, that visitors are reluctant to leave. They actually, many of them are following the historic pathway just as a way to kind of
process.
And sort of continue to...
And transition from the past to the present
again.
To
deal with it and create that transition. So I think that's interesting. We also have gotten tremendous number of comment cards from people saying just what an incredible experience this was. That, you know, people have been... I mean, the kinds of comments they leave are very positive, but also very personal and emotional on their end as well. So they really have had an emotional experience. The other thing that we have heard back from a lot of people is the talk back board, which asking people to tell us what do they think is the unfinished work for freedom, and to fill out a post-it note, which is kind of the old-fashioned equivalent of a tweet.
Remember those days of post-it notes.
But it is amazing what people have written in pencil on a small square post-it note, which is incredibly... they really have grappled with that question. And the numbers of responses have been incredible.
It's full all the time.
So in the first 3 months, July, August, September... we have gotten more, probably around 1,500 responses. And as I said, most of them are not just little squiggles offhand things, but really serious comments. In fact, they are so interesting that we are planning to archive them. And I have a graduate student who is interested, a PhD in public history, who's interested in analyzing them and digitizing them and actually using them for research in terms of how people feel, how visitors use their own experience. So I think that is going to be sort of new content that historians in the future will be looking at to say what were people thinking in 2013 and how interesting that would be 25, 50 years hence.
From now, at the 200th anniversary. And last and certainly least, from all this experience of building the museum, putting it together, struggling with these issues, how to present them, we expect there will be a book within a year, and our guest today will have an essay in there. The book will be called Increased Devotion, and I'm sure you'll be listening to that, hearing about that on one of these podcasts in the future. Our guest today is Ms. Barbara Franco, the founding executive director of the new Seminary Ridge Museum, and we found out that there's a lot new in this new museum. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.